This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Thank you for again joining us for another exciting episode of the Magic Word Podcast. We appreciate you tuning in each week and listening to these episodes with such a variety of different people that we have as guests each week, and we try to provide just not only entertaining conversations, but also some things that will educate along the way. So, and perhaps introduce you to some people that you haven't met before. This week's episode is brought to you again by the Friends of the Magic Word. And if you're wondering who are the Friends of the Magic Word, well, if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, you can see when it says to join the Friends of the Magic Word, there is a Hall of Fame that lists all the people who have ever given as much as a dollar to the podcast. And so we thank each and every one of you, regardless of your sponsorship, whether it's a donation or an ongoing pledge. Thank you very much. And it certainly helps us to defray the costs that we have that are ongoing here at the Magic Word Podcast. And these continue despite the times we are in and then beyond as well. Well, thank you again very much. As I was saying, that I'd like to introduce you from time to time to different people, perhaps who may not be as well known and perhaps not in the mainstream, if you will, of our magic community. That is, hasn't really had they haven't had their own cover on a magazine, Magic Magazine, or articles have been written about them, but they are people who just are out there working in the trenches all the time. And in particular, that the majority of the magicians are not full-time professionals. In fact, I've heard it said that only 10% of our entire magic community are really full-time professionals. And so there are quite a few people who do it on a part-time basis, that you might consider amateurs, but if you're an amateur and you're getting paid, then I guess you are a professional. And in the words of Gene Anderson, that he calls them part-time professionals, which I think is a much better term. And the reason they're called a part-time professional is because whenever that you are on stage or you're performing whatever type of a show it is, whether it's a birthday party, a school show, whatever, cocktail, strolling, magic and restaurants, etc., if you have another full-time job in which you derive the majority of your wages, then you are a part-time professional, meaning that you're going to perform in a professional manner as if you were a full-time professional. And even though that's, again, that you're only deriving a portion of your income. Well, again, there are a lot of people who are part-time professionals, and there are many, like myself, who had full-time jobs and then had transitioned from being a part-time professional into being a full-time pro. Well, some time back, I had received an email from someone who had asked about how you do transition and how do you balance the life of being a full-time anything and also a part-time professional in the magic field. And so I thought I should go to someone who I really highly respect and is a very good friend of mine, Mr. Jamie Salinas. And he is a person locally here in Houston. And he and I have worked together on so many different venues. We had a partnership together for a while called Top Talent Productions, in which that we hosted and produced magic shows on a monthly basis at the local hotel here in Houston. And then also that for 8 years, we did seances in downtown Houston during the month of October. And we also put together then a lecture notes. It was going to develop into a book, but someone ripped us off on that idea. And actually, we had put together a lecture and given it the Mindvention. And then someone liked it so much, they decided to put together a book and use the our words and from our chapters and actually flesh out the our notes into a book, which we had intended to do. But anyhow, someone else beat us to it. We just didn't publish our own words before someone else published our words. But on the good side, the person was not apologetic, but basically said, hey, that was a great lecture, and I want to send you a copy of the book I completed that fleshed that out. Yeah. Well, anyhow, as I said, Jamie and I had done seances. We worked together at the Magic Island when it was open many years ago. We have done many shows together where we've done close-up where one of us was on the stage and the other one was doing some strolling and vice versa. We've worked at hospital shows and for children's wards. Anyhow, he has been doing a little bit of everything. And in addition to that, Jamie has been someone who has also been a creator. He has several ideas which are on the market, one of which is Lotto Fever, which is fantastic. It is a closer for most shows of mine and several other people as well. It's just a phenomenal effect. And he has several other things that he's come out with then as well. And most recently that he's got something that was in the top 10 downloads actually for Penguin Magic, and that's called Perfect Personality Readings. He and Paul Draper had put together a download, and this is something, in fact, that he's going to be offering to you, the listener, as a prize. So he's got a couple of these, and we'll talk about that on the backside of this podcast, so this way that you can learn how that you can register for a chance to win one of these downloads. And it can be available for anybody, regardless where you are in the world, because it is a download. Well, anyhow, so I said that Jamie is a part-time professional, but he also is in IT, at information technology business here in Houston. He also plays guitar, rides a bicycle, has two children, a wife, a very loving family, and he's a loving father. So he balances all of this in addition to doing probably 200 shows a year. So he's going to talk about all that, and I kind of join in then also, because when I was working full-time with another job, and then how I balanced that, and then also made the launch to being a full-time pro myself. So anyhow, with that preamble, I'm going to introduce then my friend here this week. Please welcome Mr. Jamie Salinas here on The Magic Word. Well, today I have with me someone who is a part-time professional. And a part-time professional is someone who actually performs in a professional manner when they go out to give a performance, as opposed to someone who might be a hobbyist or someone who just does it for fun. Now, a person can also be doing charity shows and be a part-time professional because whenever they're doing it, that they have practiced well enough and have enough shows under their belt so that they can do it, even though they're not collecting money because they're doing it for charity, but they are doing it as a part-time professional. And so I thought it'd be interesting to talk with someone who is one of the leading part-time professionals who resides here in Houston, Texas, a longtime friend of mine who we had worked together going back to the Magic Island back in, what was that, the 80s, I guess it was, and then the worked together in restaurants, and we've worked different gigs together when we've done strolling and close-up and cocktail parties, as well as being a partner not only in seances but also with a company we had called Top Talent Productions, in which that we booked a lot of other acts, and including ourselves, that we performed then for groups at the hotel. Anyhow, that's a lot to say. And he's got then a full-time job that he ties down, plus other interests that he has of bicycling and playing guitar and a lot of other stuff. So please welcome my buddy, Jamie Salinas. Hey, Jamie.
Wow, I'm tired already.
You didn't know you did so much, did you? How do you deal with?
Wow, that's a lot of stuff.
It is a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, that's something that's you know, kind of hard to deal with, and balance a family and everything then too. You know, I remember talking with Charlie McFarlane, who is a mutual friend of ours and a also a part-time professional, which that he had flown for Continental Airlines for a long number of years, as well as being a trade show magician, very successful trade show magician. And I remember, I think one time he said he was on the road either doing shows or flying over 320 days, I think. He wasn't home, so he's only home for like less than a handful of days throughout the year one time, and so that's when he decided to kind of cut back. But, you know, it's sometimes hard to balance, you know, family and a job and everything. Let's begin, I guess, by you explaining what your full-time job is that you do.
Sure. Well, first of all, I got my degree in computer science. My original plan right out of high school was to work for Exxon. My dad worked for Exxon, my grandfathers, my uncles, everybody worked for Exxon. And basically right when out of high school, I'm 17 years old, Exxon offered me a job. And I thought about it, and honestly, I really didn't want to work in a plant, but the opportunity was there. I would have made great money.
Yep.
I probably would be a millionaire by now and probably retiring, but it really, really wasn't for me. So, you know, I kind of decided, well, let me go to school and get my degree in petroleum engineering. And then the guy says, great, get your degree, come back and we'll hire you as an engineer. And started school, and I decided that chemistry was not for me. And basically I switched to computer science, and I've loved technology, and that's kind of where I found my calling in life, and there you go.
Yeah. And so, but you weren't doing any magic in college, were you?
Well, yes and no. When I first started college, I was not a magician because I graduated when I was 17 from high school. So I started attending college at 18. So it wasn't until a couple of years later, 20 years old, that I discovered magic and my love for it and basically my passion for it. So really it took me a couple of years before that really, you know, got started in, you know, being a big part of my life.
And when you started picking that up, I mean, was it, I guess, just like most of us, in which that you just kind of get really excited and started showing people around the office and some of the tricks and things you did? Or did you start doing some birthday parties right away? Or what? When did you first start working? How did you kind of ease into your performance style?
Well, you and I talk pretty frequently, so you know, for some reason, I have this lucky streak that luck always seems to be on my side.
Yes, you do. Although, for listeners, by the way, let me, as an aside, I do get these calls from Jamie on a regular basis, said, you won't believe what happened last night. And I used to think that he was the luckiest guy in the world. Now I just think he's the most intelligent guy, you know, and perform, because you have to be prepared for these kinds of things. But the stars always seem to align for Jamie that as we go on, you got to tell some of these stories about different things that have happened that where that when you're doing some mentalism, something doesn't go quite right, but it ends up being better than what you had originally intended. But anyhow, yes, you just have a charmed life when it comes to magic.
Well, I mean, the life is not completely full of roses. I mean, I've had a house fire when I was in junior high. I've had my house flooded here a couple of years ago with Hurricane Harvey. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things that come up that happen. I mean, just part of life. But as far as just being at the right place at the right time or things happening, that's the way my magic career started. I was in San Antonio, just a little weekend excursion in the Market Square. I ran across a street performer and did some amazing stuff. And now, honestly, the only thing I remember was he did the sponge balls. And, you know, but whatever he did, it was a strong impact on me. The following week, I went back to Houston, and it was my 20th birthday. And we basically went to a comedy club, and on stage was Becky Blaney. And Becky Blaney, of course, is Walter Blaney's daughter. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that at the time. And she used me on stage because it was my birthday. And she performed for me Invisible Deck. I mean, and just my mind was just totally blown. And so the following week, I'm driving around the streets of Houston and I see Magic Shop, Frankel's Costume and Magic Shop. So I pull over, go inside, and I meet the guy there who's working behind the counter, Brian Brusselback. You remember Brian?
Sure.
And so, you know, I walked in, I described what happened, and he looked at me very non-excited, and he goes, yeah, I know the trick. It's called Invisible Deck. It's like $6-$7. And in my mind, I was like, $6-$7 for the world's greatest card trick? I'll take two of them.
So I did. That was kind of the beginning of you taking two.
I did. I said, you do that a lot. Two. I just assumed that if I bought one, it's good. Two is even better.
Yeah.
So I did buy two decks and read the instructions. And then within, I guess, an hour or so, I'm performing it. Everybody loved it because it's such a great trick. You could be a mediocre performer, but that trick is just so awesome. But everybody would say, well, what else can you do? Well, that's it. So,
thank you. One trick and I'm out.
Right. So then I had to go and learn some more. And so I started making these weekly excursions to Frankel's Costume and Magic Shop, buying tricks. And during that time, I was still in college, but I was working. And I was working my first real job, you know, in the industry. Believe it or not, here we go with the luck. I'm working in the Space Station Freedom Project. So here I am on site at IBM, mm-hmm. working on a project that's going to build a space station that's going to be orbiting the Earth. First job.
Wow.
I mean, I was
dream job,
of course. I mean, obviously, I'm, you know, more in the support side and in the technical side. But still, I mean, it was just amazing, you know. And then here we are with SpaceX and everything going on. You know, so it was a very proud moment. But anyway, in that area, there was a restaurant that I frequent for lunch. And I showed the owner the invisible card trick. And again, what else can you do? And so I bought a couple of tricks. Each week I'd perform a trick for this guy. And then he says, hey, you know what? You should work here at our restaurant performing magic for the customers. And so he actually approached me instead of the other way around. And so here I am within a few months of buying my first trick. I've got my first real job. So lo and behold, within 2 weeks of performing, maybe my third week there, one of the customers says, hey, we're having this benefit party, and it would be great if you could come and work at this private party and perform some magic. Great. And our guest of honor, by the way, is a gentleman named Harry Anderson.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah. So within 2-3 weeks of real performances, now I'm being hired to work a private party for Harry Anderson. Harry was in town doing a show at one of the theaters, and they were having a party, and they wanted to take the pressure off people asking him to perform magic.
Sure.
So I came along, and I called Brian, you know, the guy behind the counter at the magic shop, and say, you know, to say, hey, I need some help. Would you come help me work this party? And he's like, oh, sure. So I bring Brian along, and then I brought Jay Schwausch, another local magician. And so there are the three of us, the only few guys that I met from the shop, performing my first big time job, and it's for Harry Anderson.
Did you get some good comments or compliments from Harry, or did he just kind of say, hey, thanks for coming? Or
Harry was very gracious. He was really nice. He asked me about several magicians in town. He was like, hey, how's so-and-so doing? And I was totally new to the scene, so I had no idea what he was talking about or who, but, you know, I didn't want to lead on to, you know, let him know I didn't know.
Right.
So I said, he's doing great, you know, and yeah, I'll see him next week. And I mean, honestly, I don't remember the names. It could have been Roger Klaus. It could have been Frank Price from Magic Island. It could have been you. Could have been anybody.
Yeah.
But I didn't know anybody.
Sure.
So there you go.
That was funny. So it was just basically from working the restaurant, which I assume obviously you were doing his tricks for this guy during the lunch hour, and they'd ask you to come in the evenings to do the shows, to work the tables. And someone from the table had seen you and said, hey, why don't you come to our party? So that's kind of a heck of a way to get introduced. Reminds me a little bit of Bill Goldman, who said that it seems like he was working tables or something, in which that a guy said to him, you know, could you work a trade show? And he said, well, what's that? And he told him, he said, sure. And that was the beginning of a very lucrative career for him for quite a number of years. But it just happened to be the right place, the right time when you're showing somebody. And you seem to have that charm that I think, you know, it's luck meets preparation a lot of times, I think, in order to make things work. And that you have a good personality and nice engaging style of performing then as well. But then you started working at the Magic Island. I think it wasn't that the late 80s or early 90s? When did you first start working there?
That was late 80s, early 90s. And now that story is another funny story, too, because here I am working this restaurant. And so now I'm you know, basically buying tricks at a magic shop, coming to a restaurant and trying them out, so to speak. And then I started doing my actual study on how do I make this better. And I found Kirk Charles' restaurant handbook, and then there was a book he recommended was called The Strolling Magician by Scott Hollingsworth. And it turned out that Scott was the entertainment director for Magic Island, and he was in my backyard. He's here in Houston. So I called Scott and said, hey, I'd like to buy your book. I'm working this restaurant. And then basically Scott says, great, why don't you come out to Magic Island, be my guest, you know, come on out. And so I did. I pretty much kept a low profile, watched the shows, and had a great time. Scott gave me his book. I gave him some money. And then Scott says, hey, we're gonna go hang out at this bar afterwards. Do you want to join us? And, of course, absolutely. So we're there talking, hanging out till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Right,
you know,
right.
Illegally after hours. You know, yeah. The bar had closed, but we were still there.
Yeah.
And Scott says, hey, I might need some help from time to time. Would you be interested in working Magic Island? So I don't know if it was the liquor talking or, you know, we just had great conversation. And I think it was a combination of both. And so a couple of weeks later, something happened where they needed somebody, and here I am showing up with my basic magic to work in one of the premier magic themed dinner clubs in the world.
Yes, right. In
so again, there goes my luck.
Exactly. You had such good luck, you know, for doing that. And I'm sure that trying to stumble upon a solid routine, and the nice thing, of course, about the Magic Island was you could do the same routine over and over. It's not like the Magic Castle where that you're just working like for the close-up gallery doing four shows. You basically can do anywhere from 2 to 15 shows a night at the Magic Island.
Yeah, you know, I worked there during its heyday. I mean, well, there was two eras that Magic Island went through that were considered mm-hmm. the heyday. One was right before I started there, and that's when you were there.
Yeah.
With Banachek, Charlie McFarlane, Dick Hatch, all those guys.
Bill Palmer.
Exactly, and then there was a second wave that came in, and that was myself and Kurt Miller and Lanny Kibbe and
Jay Schwalsh.
You know, and Jay Schwalsh, and then of course all the guys who would come in from all over. This is where I met, I mean, world famous guys from acts from all over.
Yeah, we were in a very unique situation there, Jamie, of course, the Magic Island, where we had a place that we could practice stuff and you could get better through repetition over and over, plus the opportunity to, as you say, rub shoulders with people on a regular basis. When you go to a magic convention, you get an opportunity to sit and chat with somebody or have a drink or dinner and watch their show, see the lecture, but they're also pulled in so many different directions. I say they being the talent who's booked for the thing, but by other people who want some of their time then as well, plus their obligations, of course, to lecture and perform, etc. But at the Magic Island, they're here 24/7 for like 2 to 4 weeks at a time. And so they got time during the daytime to kind of hang out and meet for lunch because they're working in the evenings, but not doing anything really during the daytime. So there was a great opportunity here for us to get to know these guys on a pretty personal basis, on a regular basis. I mean, go out. I remember going and playing golf with Jeff Hobson several times. He'd come over to the house. It's like, hey, you know, for the afternoon or morning, and, you know, he wasn't going to be working until later that evening. You know, it happened frequently that people were just here. And you really get to know these guys who later got to be such luminaries, you know, in our profession. So we really were at a good place and a right time, but not everyone has that opportunity. So what would you recommend as far as when, you know, for people to get some kind of experience if they don't have something? Well, we don't even have the Magic Island now anymore. I mean, who knows what's going to be opening again, but what would you recommend? How would people get experience?
Well, you know, obviously the stars all aligned for me, and even though I'm a part-time performer, which now the cat is out of the bag, a lot of people think I'm a full-time performer with as much as I work, but in reality, back then I was burning the candle really literally at both ends. I mean, you know, I remember now, of course, I only work Friday, Saturday nights, so I was able to do my weekly job, you know, during the week, but sometimes I'd come in on a Thursday night, and you'd have a performer come in and, hey, let's hang out. And next thing I know, it's 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and I got to be at work at 7, 8 o'clock.
That's right.
So I don't even go to sleep. You know, back then, obviously, I was much younger and that wasn't a problem.
Well, I did the same thing whenever that I was working at the Magic Island. Actually, they had a condo down there. And so whenever that mm-hmm. the shows were over in the evening and you go out for breakfast and hang out until the wee hours, like you said, you have a job to go to early, like at 7:30 the next day. So I, rather than driving back and forth, I just stayed at the condo. So I was closer to my office and I didn't have to fight the rush hour traffic, you know, which was one advantage that we had, too.
Oh, exactly. Now, again, you know, my lucky situation, right place, the right time, all these opportunities fell into my lap, and things worked out really well. But if you live in a place that doesn't have this type of environment or type of situation, there's still a really good living you can make. And there's a lot of us who are doing what I'm doing now, and that is either working a restaurant, you know, and that's really the best place to get your experience. If you're new into the business, mm-hmm. there is nothing like working 2 or 3 hours at a restaurant table hopping, because you've got angle issues, you've got kids, you've got adults, you've got people drinking, you're going to be exposed to everything. And, right. and you're going to either get really good or you're going to crash and burn.
You also are interacting so, with the wait staff, and it's the same thing, like you have to move fairly quickly because the food's coming or whatever. You learn how to cut a routine short or lengthen if you need to and kind of develop a jazz magic style.
You know, it's not just the magic itself. It's the personality and the dealing with other people, and that's the other thing. You're going to quickly have to learn to that you are part of the whole image, the whole experience, and you are not the primary person there. So there's a lot of guys who are very talented magicians who just don't have the people skills. And unfortunately, you know, they have a hard time with it, but you're going to have both. You'll have to be able to work with people, be able to make adjustments. You'll have to be able to walk up to a table. And I've had somebody say, I'm sorry, we had a family death and we're having a little family meeting here, but thank you anyway. And I immediately went into, absolutely, you wave down any of the wait staff, myself. I'm going to alert everybody to give you your privacy. If you need anything, please wave us down. Let me get you some more drinks. Let me get whatever need. I mean, you have to adjust. You have to go into a different mode.
That's true. And you kind of touched on a point as far as being introspective. You have to be honest with yourself if you are the right fit. In other words, that you think, hey, this is going to be great, and you start doing it and then realize, you know, this really is not for me because it's not clicking. You're not clicking with the audience or maybe that you may be. If you are or you're not, can that rudder be changed so you go in a different direction, basically? Or maybe if you're wanting to do something, it's going to be some people want to do more parlor or birthday parties. I mean, you're doing a ton of birthday parties, which that's something you kind of got in then too as well. And I think you're the like number one birthday party children's entertainer really in Houston today.
Well, you know, a couple of years ago, I would say that fact is true. But now I've kind of slowed things down. There's a couple of guys who are out there who are working a lot. I have slowed things down for a couple of reasons.
Number one, to do how many? What, 3 to 6 a weekend or something?
Oh, yeah, three or four a day.
Yeah.
You know, on the weekends. So I'd leave in the morning and I would spread everybody out and I'm zigzagging across town, you know, that kind of thing. And sometimes, again, luck would be on my side. I'm driving all the way to a city like Conroe that's just outside of Houston and I'll have two or three birthday parties in that same city. I mean, it's amazing that I'll book those kind of things, you know, that happens every now and then. But sometimes I have to give some of the work to some colleagues, you know, who are in the business. But I have slowed things down a little bit because I'm in a position where I can because I'm a part-time professional. And my income doesn't solely rely on the magic anymore. My daughter has already graduated and she's basically on her own now. And my son is... he has his degree as well, and he's working on an advanced degree, and he's at the end of his last year or two living with us as well.
And so you're really trying to spend some more time with your children, you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, just enjoying things, you know, because don't get me wrong, I love performing magic. I mean, you know, I have a passion for it. And that's the other thing. You really have to enjoy the children's magic as well, because you're going to be working some really tough environments sometimes.
Or you're mainly the babysitter.
You have to accept it. You know, you mentioned I like to ride bikes. And one of the things that I learned early on when going out on a bike ride with a large group is sometimes it's going to rain. And it's going to rain on you. And, oh, well, you just go with the flow and you're wet now and you just continue on and you still have a good time as long as you accept it. And the magic is the same way. Sometimes you'll be in an environment where you'll be with 200 or 300 people and it's a huge family event and they're going to stick you in the corner with 30 to 60 kids and all the adults are going to be talking and loud and everything. And you have to entertain those 30 to 40, 50 kids in the corner and do your show as if they're the only ones in the entire room. And it can be frustrating, but you can't let it get to you. And that's the whole thing is as a worker, you just have to accept it, move on. And once you accept it, like, I'm going to get wet. It's just going to be a tough environment. Mm-hmm. Move on and have a great time.
But how do you balance that sometimes? I mean, I know that in addition to the birthday parties that you occasionally will have like a brunch or a luncheon for a corporate show. And so you have to take some time off work or have an extended lunch hour, I guess, in order to accommodate.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's part of my vacation time off time is being used to perform magic. It really is. So I really only spend about a true week going on vacation with the family. I mean, I take advantage of long weekends like 4th of July. You know, we have a family house in Wimberley, Texas. So those long weekends, we'll go and enjoy ourselves, spend time with family and have a great time. And, a couple of years ago, the family and I, we jumped on a plane, went to Paris. So occasionally we'll plan those out. But a lot of my vacation time and comp time is spent taking off to perform magic shows. So it is a balance. You'll have to decide, is this a higher paying job enough to take time off? Sometimes I have to turn them down and send them to other performers.
Mm-hmm. Well, like with me, whenever I was working in the energy business on a full-time basis and doing magic on a part-time basis, that I too would take off vacation time in order to go to when I was doing a trade show, if I was having to be out of the country, just let alone out of the state or whatever, it's like, okay, I'm going to have to take off a few days. But also, whenever that there were some magic conventions I would attend, or if there was something that was going to be where I was working for a conference on a weekend or something, a lot of times that I was in a fortunate position where that in my job in sales, that it was within my territory, so I was able to travel to that area and I could arrange my business travel so that I had business meetings leading up to the weekends. So whenever I would go and visit with clients on a Wednesday or Thursday and Friday, then I would, instead of flying back home Friday afternoon, I was able to stay there through Friday afternoon visiting with clients and having some meetings, and then just check into the hotel for the convention, for an example, on Friday and Saturday, and then come home on Sunday. So I was able to do that as well. So that might be something else that some people who are listening to this, who are part-time professionals and kind of thinking, well, how can I balance that? Well, you can balance the work, and the company can pay for it, and it's kind of a win-win situation for both of you, and you can plan like that then as well. But you're right, as far as the vacation time, as far as taking some time away, that I too would have to just have a few days. Well, one time I remember working at the Magic Castle, and I was there for a week, so we took a week's vacation, and during the daytime, that when my boys were quite young at the time, we went to Knott's Berry Farm one day, and Disneyland the next day, and we went to Wax Museum, we went to the beach, you know, different things each day that we had some fun. But at nighttime, I was going and working at the Magic Castle, and then coming back home and sleeping for a few hours, and we get up, and so for them it was a vacation, but Kathy would have to take them for dinner, you know, someplace in the evening around where we were staying. So I balanced it that way, but you only get so many days of vacation a year from your company, so you have to spend that wisely, and as you'd said, you have to decide if that is a true enough passion and something that will pay well enough, or might be something that's important enough that you want to perform and do, that you make the choice of taking that vacation time.
Right. And the whole thing, too, is you still have to, spend that time with family. And like you were doing the daytime, going to the theme parks and doing all that kind of stuff. I mean, my son was heavily into tennis. So a lot of weekends I would be tennis tournaments and, you know, that kind of thing, driving him around. And then,
sure.
And then squeezing in shows here and there, you know, and that kind of thing. But so you do have to figure out what is the, you know, it's kind of like a business, the cost benefit analysis. Is the money coming in worth taking the time off for this? And sometimes it is, sometimes it's not.
Was there an unspoken thing that you had with Lisa, your wife, prior to this, as far as your participation and not being there all the time with her when she may need to get some things done or maybe around the house or whatever? I mean, did you actually sit down with her and say, look, I'm really going to be, I like magic. I'm going to be doing some shows. It'll bring in some additional income. It's just going to be, think of it as an outside job or something. I mean, did you have a chat with your wife about that?
We did, you know, because it is a big trade-off, especially during the holiday season. Sometimes, you know, when December's coming up and all the holiday parties, I look forward to it. But at the same time, I dread it because I'm not going to be home. Mm-hmm. There's going to be parties. There's going to be events. There's going to be family events that I'm going to miss. This year, December the 12th, is the second Saturday of the month of December. It's the busiest night for corporate events. And my niece is getting married that day. And I'm like, well, great. I'm going to have to take the whole day off. I'm going to lose money. I'm going to lose the shows. And then I had a booking for December the 12th. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure out what am I going to do with this? And I've got to figure out how I'm going to turn this job over to another performer. And this is a repeat client. And they had actually booked me, you know, year and a half in advance. And so I'm trying to figure out how to do this. And then with the COVID-19 virus and stuff that's happening during this time that we're recording this, that show got canceled. So, again, my luck came through and the family wedding is still on. So I'm good now.
The wedding's off, but the Christmas magic party is off.
The wedding's on, but the Christmas party's off. That's correct.
Yeah, once again, the Jamie luck.
I got lucky.
Another one of your situations.
And the beauty with this situation was I told the customer, hey, I totally understand, but guess what? I've got some streaming shows, virtual shows as well, and they booked me for one of those. So it turned, you know, it basically ended up swapping out that night for doing some other smaller events, but more often, you know, more shows.
Right. Now, I mentioned at the beginning also that there are other things that you and I have been involved with, Top Talent Productions, as well as our seances and things like that. Why have you gotten off into different directions? I mean, when you really were specializing so much in birthday parties, why do something different?
You know, the whole thing is it's kind of like a challenge. It really is. I mean, I like most types of different aspects of magic. I like the bizarre stuff. And when I was little, I've always been into the paranormal type stuff. I always like watching stories about Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster. You know, Leonard Nimoy had a show called In Search Of. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite show as a kid. And they would always do something paranormal, whether it was a ghost or a monster or whatever kind of thing. And so when I got into magic, I learned there was a lot of different parts of magic, part of it being the bizarre side as well. And I looked at it as another challenge, as another, what can I do? What can I learn? And it's a great learning experience, just like everything is. I've had some friends saying, why are you working some of these clubs? I work some pretty seedy bars and clubs, even after I've already, you know, been established and I've got my experience. And my response is, the more experience you have to work in these different environments, the better off you're going to be as a performer. And I just like the challenge. It's like, that's what it is. It's a challenge.
Yeah, I guess that's certainly true. But you have to, and by checking that out, you might find out that you have a passion for that. I mean, I know, for an example, early on that you did a lot of illusions, and eventually you sold your Cube Zag and some other things. And so, and I think you even, did you do some doves for a while too?
I did. I had some doves. You know, I did a small dove opening at Magic Island. I had what I called the dove act with one bird, you know, but I think at one point I had five or six birds, and it was a big commitment. I had taken care of the animals, training them, working with them. But again, it was that challenge. And then as we find what we like in life and in performances, mm-hmm. you know, we kind of sometimes grow in and out of different things. And the illusion part was great. Obviously, back in the 80s, David Copperfield was king. You know, working in Magic Island, 80s and 90s, the illusion guys coming in. I remember seeing Dan Summers in the August timeframe when it's 102 degrees at night. He's loading up his truck, just dripping with sweat. And I thought, do I really want to be an illusionist?
Right, right. When you're carrying out a small bag just with some playing cards and coins.
Yeah, you know, it was a big difference. I mean, some people have a passion for it. I mean, Kurt Miller is doing a fantastic job as an illusionist in this day and age right now. Mm-hmm. And he's doing tons of corporate events. He's living his dream. And that's because, he loves it. And, you know, usually you're very good at things you love. And that's why Kurt is excelling at it.
Well, you also had developed a performance or an opportunity to perform for children and corporate clients by using Zoom. And I would think that with your IT background and access to audiovisual components and hardware and software, that it would be a little bit easier for you. But how did you go about developing your shows that you did and interactivity with kids? And how do you do that?
Well, you know, I, like many other performers, found my appointment book being opened up with cancellations and no more bookings and that kind of thing. And as a performer, you have to perform. And so when I found there was this opportunity for magicians to perform online, you know, that intrigued me. Again, that's another challenge. I've developed what I feel is probably a really good 30-40 minute show. I mean, I could do longer, but I am right now really comfortable with that 30-40 minute performance that I think is very solid, very good. People will be entertained. People will have a great time. And they'll be amazed, just like attending a regular performance. But again, it goes back to that challenge of how do I do this? How do I put the technology together? How do I make it seem easy? How do I make it seem fun? And that, again, that was a challenge and something I've been working on and just really enjoying it.
Yeah, I know that you've developed that. It was something in which that you were doing for free before you kind of got your feet wet enough that you felt like that you could start charging for that. And I like your ideas as far as after you've muted everyone when you're on a Zoom conference, but you have them draw their names on a piece of paper. They can hold up their names and you could see that and use them as a volunteer once that they've done it that way. That's clever.
Right. Now, that is not my idea. That actually came from Robert Berry, another good mutual friend. And, you know, by working and performing with other performers, you pick up some ideas, you share creative, and here's what works for me, here's what doesn't work, and you learn. You adapt and move on. Mm-hmm. Or again, just like the restaurant business, either you succeed or you fail. And that's the way I looked at this. I didn't want to perform bad shows for money. So I spent a couple of weeks performing free magic shows for children who were having birthday parties or birthdays that were at home and were not able to have a party. And so I did 15, 20 minutes. I got a little comfortable with it. To be honest with you, the first two performances, I absolutely hated it. And now I'm very comfortable and, you know, I'm happy and having a good time with it.
That's something you think you're going to be carrying on into the future?
Absolutely. In fact, next week on my website, we'll be advertising virtual performances for both corporate events and for family shows.
And that's going to stay there forever.
Well, I mean, who knows? We may have this problem again in December time. The problem may go away. I really don't know what's in store. And some people feel like it's no big deal, you know, that we're back to, you know, operational. We, you know, just take some minor precautions. And there are some people who feel that they don't want to be out in public and then, you know, they're more cautious. So I think you got to be versatile. I think you have to be prepared to do those live shows and virtual shows.
One of the things that you developed last year also in 2019 was your Art of Magic. And that brings to bear a lot of your experience. That is just a short 10-minute YouTube video for magicians to view and get your ideas on different things. Some of them are trick reviews because you've been also, as if you haven't been doing enough things, you've been working, is it for Genie or MUM as a reviewer?
Yeah, I write for Mum Magazine, which reminds me I have several reviews to do. So thanks for reminding me. I'm actually going on a short little trip tomorrow, and I'll be taking those products with me, those items for review. But what I started doing was I developed my own YouTube channel, like If We Need Another One. But to be honest with you, it's more therapeutic. It's more for my own benefit. I'm learning just like everybody else. This profession, one of my episodes was about Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. And magicians live the life of Groundhog Day. And basically what that means is we repeat things over and over and over. And the idea is to you make a minor tweak, you make it a little bit better, and you perform it again. and then you make your minor tweak, you perform it again. And that's a constant process that we all should be doing. And it was very eye-opening making that little episode for, you know, YouTube about that process. And it should be for everything we do, mm-hmm. not just magic. It's everything in life.
Well, I would think also whenever that you're not only doing your show over and over, but so many times whenever that you come up to a new audience and they give you the standard lines, hey, you can make my wife disappear, or, you know, things they think are funny. It's the funniest thing in the world to them because they've never said it out loud before and they think it's funny. So it is like Groundhog Day. It's like, oh, I've not heard that one before. So you have to be able to respond as if that it's fresh. And so it is Groundhog Day too, even in that regard, when you're in some of your performances.
Right. You know, it's a mental state of mind. It's just like the, again, another one of my episodes called, Change Your Attitude. And that goes back to what I learned performing those children's shows. You know, at one point, you know, I feel like, hey, I'm an award winner in magic, and here I am prepared to perform magic for everyone in this room. And there are 300-400 people there, family audience, and the host puts me in the corner with the children and says, here, entertain the kids while the adults talk and mingle.
Right.
You know, your first response is you're insulted,
mm-hmm.
but you have to accept and move on. Now, obviously, you can change things. You can prepare for these things sometimes in advance, and but sometimes that's what the client wants. That's what the customer wants. You are there to entertain the children. You can have an attitude, or you can adjust and make it the best situation for you. And that's what I do. That's what I do for everything. So it's you have to learn to adjust and go with the flow and make the best of whatever circumstance you have.
That's a good point. Yeah, I remember working bar mitzvah, one of the first ones that I'd done, and I learned a lesson, that is that you are hired to entertain the children for the bar mitzvah. Because first time I had done some things for the kids, but then I walked over and did some things for the adults, and the mothers made it very clear that stay in that room, do not come in here. The adults will be over here, the kids are over there, you're paid to do that. Got it. Okay. So that's what the bar mitzvah is about. It's about him. It's not about the rest of the people. So, and I think it's the same thing a lot of times as a birthday party magician, where you are entertaining the children, but you also have adults in the back of the room who are kind of some of them watching, some of them having a drink or maybe making more noise than they should be. And you're basically kind of the babysitter up front, but it's hard to sometimes swallow, as you say, to realize, okay, I recognize that's my place. That's why I'm here.
Well, you know, and actually, I learned that from working the restaurants and working at Magic Island, the repetition. You know, here it is Saturday night. I probably Saturday during the day, I've gone to my kids' birthday parties, you know, activities, my son's tennis tournaments, whatever the situation is. Maybe I cut the grass. You know, I'm tired. And now I'm driving to Magic Island. And these people are paying a lot of money. And so I have to change my mindset. I would crank up the radio, listen to some high energy music, mm-hmm. put myself in that mindset that I'm going to go and give these people the best entertainment, the best show I can deliver. Mm-hmm. And the same is going to be for the last show of the night, because you mentioned 15 shows. Christmas time, it's as many as 30 shows a night. And I loved it. I thrived in it because
yeah.
it made you tougher. It made you able to change that mindset. And so now it's a lot easier for when I'm in, weekend situation performing.
You're absolutely right. And I think that you have to deliver. It has to be fresh whenever that the audience is paying good money, as you say, to see your show. That's why you need to be professional. That's why we're talking about being a part-time professional, because it's, you know, you should have been preparing all day in their mind for that evening, and you are bringing everything to bear, and all the outside influences have basically all disappeared. What I used to do when I was walking into a restaurant to perform for a couple of hours, two or three or four, whatever, as I was walking, before I opened the door, my smile would broaden, get wider and wider, so that by the time that I opened the door, I was showing teeth and smiling, so that the hostess or the bartender who would see me and say, hello, Scott, and welcome me, but it's like I had I'd put on a different veneer. It's like, I'm here to have fun and people are going to enjoy this tonight and forget about whatever trials I've had during the day or traffic jam or, you know, problems with the kids or work, whatever it is. That is something that's hard to balance sometimes, is to put the work out of your mind, particularly if you've had a bad day or if you've been traveling and due to your job and you've been at the airport or had delays of this nature or that. But once you get there, the rest of the world should be behind you because they are paying you to see a show that, I mean, they've got the same issues and they're trying to escape from that. And you are that escape. That's the main thing you've got to remember.
Well, then, and this is the whole challenge of the part-time professional. You know, if you're a full-time guy, full-time performer, you know, you're sleeping most of the day. You've got much more time to get your show ready. Yes, I realize you have to market and there's a lot of work. It's not just showing up in the evening and doing your job and you're free the whole time. Obviously, it takes a lot of work. But as a part-time professional, we have the best of both worlds. We get to dip our foot into that environment. We get to experience those things, and we also get to have the stability, the safety of having a full-time job, of having a career. My whole thing is once you have kids, that's your number one priority. And there are performers who have kids that do a fantastic job. Mario the Magician travels around with his children, and they're having the best life ever.
Sure.
You know, so there is a balance that they're doing on the road, but it's all up to you and your decision and what is good for you.
I know some cruise ship magicians, the same thing. Cruise ship magicians have been doing some homeschooling with their children while they're out to sea. And that is a choice also about what are you going to be doing? Is it, you know, it's a dilemma that whether you're in magic or not, a lot of people face, in which that you have a spouse who has an equally good career and that one gets an opportunity perhaps in another location that requires a move. Do you follow that person and then give up your job to find another one? I mean, there are a lot of things to balance and to understand, you know, it just outside of magic. But when you add magic to it, one thing nice about magic, of course, is that that is universal. So it doesn't matter. I mean, if once that you have decided in that situation whether or not to move because your spouse has got an opportunity or not, or whatever happens as far as the rest of your life, you will find some place to perform in your new location. So you can just, again, adjust the rudder and go in a different direction. And now you're working in a different restaurant or just trying to develop local clients around your new city.
Right. And as the part-time professional, it is that juggling of that whole, you know, all those aspects of it. And you have to find that what works for you. You know, the balance is going to be great, you know, whether if it's performing more, performing less. You know, we have the best of both worlds. I look at it this way. I have brother-in-laws, I have family members that play golf, that are hunters, and that stuff gets expensive. Having a fishing boat, the boat costs money, storage of the boat, fuel, you know, picking up supplies before you go fishing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that fish that I catch, if we add up all the money and everything we spent, that's a $500 piece of fish there, you know, if not
that's
more.
True. You know. And golfing is another thing where you're going to be having a big investment with your equipment and maybe belonging to a country club and the devotion of going down and playing for 4.5 hours or whatever, and plus your drive time there and back. I mean, you're kind of gone for the day. It's similar in which that as a magician, you're out performing for the day, you know, but here you're out playing golf or you're fishing or that you're just boating for recreational purposes or, you know, there are other kinds of hobbies. This is not unusual. It's just that you need to balance your passion, I guess, with your full-time profession and not let one get into the way of the other and recognize what it is that's important. You had a good point that your children are the most important. And then beyond that, you don't want to lose your job. You want to make sure that that's going to keep you afloat. I mean, there are people, though, again, and you and I can name some names of people who have been working on a full-time basis and then had magic as a part-time profession and realized that before long that the income from magic was overtaking their full-time job, and deciding, you know, if I start spending more time doing this, this might be a better opportunity. So that might be something to consider then too. And so how would you, or when would you make that decision that's like, I'm going to go full-time?
Well, you know, and that's an individual choice. You know, what I tell my kids is, you know, my daughter got her degree in linguistics, and she speaks of, you know, several languages. And her whole thing was, this is what I want to do. She studied abroad, and I know that the job prospects for her are not really high-paying jobs, but they're enough for her to be independent. And more importantly, she's going to be happy. And that's the big key. It's like, if I would have settled and taken that job at the refinery, yeah, I'd probably be a millionaire right now, retired. But I would not have magic in my life. I probably would not be happy. I probably would be my third or fourth wife, and who knows how many kids, kind of thing. I mean, you don't know.
You never know. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. So you
there
have
are choices
to go with
you make.
You have to decide what's best for you and what's going to work. Some people can work on next to nothing. Some people can develop a business plan that they're going to be super successful. But you know, the important thing is you got to be prepared to go with the flow. So if there are any changes, like this pandemic situation we're in currently now, you might have to adjust your income, and that's the whole challenge. You have to be diversified. It's just like anything in like investments.
Well, I think that making that leap into magic on a full-time basis would be like leaping also from perhaps one job without having another job ready behind it, because gig employees, and I mean magicians, musicians, and even actors, are unemployed between jobs. I mean, your job is to find another job, basically. It makes it difficult if you haven't prepared yourself financially, physically, psychologically, emotionally, and also had the buy-in with your family. So that's a thing I think that if you're going to be doing this on a part-time basis and then decide, okay, well, should I do this on a full-time basis? Then you have to decide, well, have I got 6 months or a year or 2 years, 3 years worth of savings that I can last on if nothing comes through like I think that it's going to? How much will insurance cost me? You have to have insurance. Also, and it's important to have the buy-in of your spouse. Is the spouse buying in to saying, I'm willing for you to take that leap? Perhaps that he or she may have another career also, which is always nice then that you have that kind of support structure. But then also, if you have older children, perhaps they could be what I'd call boomerang kids. I mean, as they leave, but then they try and make it and can't, and they come back. And so you have to support the children, you know, then as well. As I said, insurance and savings and just a lot of things to think about, more than just, hey, I'm going to go do this. You have to pack your parachute, basically, to make sure that it's going to open. You just can't have a parachute and then jump off the cliff and then realize, you know, I didn't really pack that right. And you could crash and burn. That's not good. So there are a lot of preparations involved that you really need to think about. And then also, what would be your long-term goal with that? I mean, you know, 1 year, 3, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Now, you know, where do you want to be? How much do you want to make? And is that what's important to you? That is it important to make money, or is it important to have fame? Is it important to get more work? There are a lot of people who are magicians who the listeners have never heard of before, and myself as well, that are working underground, if you will, but very, very successful, but they are not really well-known or celebrated magicians because they're not on the cover of the magazines and everything. But they're workers. Yes. They are keeping their head down. They don't care about the celebrated status of being recognized among their peers. But so again, you have to recognize what is it that you're wanting to get out of this? Is it because you really love it? I mean, your life has shown how much you do love it. I'll talk about all the things they know that you've been doing there, you know, in different directions because they've been challenges. So anyhow, things to think about as you're considering actually going from a part-time to a full-time career as a magician.
You know, my two worlds have intermingled because, you know, I have a degree in computer science. I manage tech support. And so I do a presentation called The Magic of Customer Service. And I've been very fortunate to present this at several large industry conferences where I'll deliver a keynote about improving customer service skills, but I make it entertaining with the magic. I'll do actually two tricks in the entire presentation. And the beauty is I have some, you know, I have my credentials in the computer business, my certifications and my experience, and then combining that with my public speaking skills and magic. So those two worlds have intermingled in a sense. And that's kind of what I'm preparing for now at this stage in life, is pursuing a little bit more of that.
Yeah, good point as to whether or not that you need to keep that separate, because some people may have jobs in which that they can't do magic or let their employers know that they have a part-time job or that they do magic at all, because they might think that that interferes with their job description and what they should be doing full-time on their job. When I was working, people that I work with all knew I was a magician, and when I had moved from one job to another one, a lot of times they would say, hey, on your last day, can you actually do a trick for us? You've never done anything in the years you've been here, can you show us a trick? My clients knew that, because I think that it's an easy in to talk with a client. Everyone likes magic. Everyone likes humor, likes jokes, but jokes can be different. They could be funny or stupid or punny. They could be rude or blue, but and not all comedy is accepted by everybody, but magic is universal. So I was able to be that guy that not everybody did magic, that they would remember me. So as a salesman, I was able to have that, to identify me different from other salesmen who would be coming in, and would also get me past the gatekeeper into the people I was needing to talk with. But I think there are some jobs that may not encourage you to do magic, and you do kind of have to keep that on the down low, because you don't want them knowing that you do have another career or another opportunity. I'm just the opposite. I think that it's important that your employer does know that you have another gig, so that way that you are empowered to know that if they do have a cutback and you are let go or you lose your job or that for whatever reason, it's like, not to worry. I've got something else that will get me by, if not forever, at least during an interim period, because I have the contacts, I know how to do it, I've got the work ethic to do magic, I know the shows and how to go about marketing myself, etc. So those are some things to consider, I think, too, is if you're thinking about switching.
Well, obviously, even just switching or mingling the magic with your daytime job is, you know, that you become unique and you become remembered. I mean, even though I'm in the computer field, I manage tech support for a educational-based organization, and we have schools, we have children, and I have performed magic shows for these kids. Part of our program is called a Super Mentor, and what we do is we have these Head Start programs for children in at-risk locations. Maybe they're financial, maybe English is a second language, and they're not going to be ready for school, so we prepare these children for school, and I go there once a month and read to the children, read them stories, and, you know, get them excited. A lot of these kids don't have men in their lives, mm-hmm. and that's why they wanted a male figure to read to them. And of course, I perform a magic trick at the end of the reading, and so I'm able to incorporate that in part of my day job.
There might be opportunities also within your job to do a trade show for the company. I know I did on several companies that I worked with whenever that we were going to a show and they knew I was a magician, and so I could attract traffic. Sometimes I had things prepared, and sometimes it was just kind of impromptu and would get a crowd going, and they said, hey, next year, let's make this more serious and actually have this as a theme. So that's another thing you might think of. It's an opportunity within your corporation where you
right.
can do magic.
Right. Oh, without a doubt.
Okay, well, listen, this has been great and good tips and things that I think both of us hopefully have given that might help people in thinking about going from part-time to full-time, and also how you balance that. And it's basically not easy, but you just have to have that passion and choose what you're going to be doing. So any last words or suggestions as to how that you would balance that before we close out here?
Well, the thing is family time. You will have to make sure that money is not everything. You will have to decide sometimes, like, for example, this regular client and my niece's wedding, which is more important.
Right.
And, you know, now, again, my luck came through, and that they I didn't have to make the bad decision or be the bad guy and tell them, sorry, I'm going to have to send you to somebody else. I can't do it this year. But I'm sure they would have been understanding if I would just explain the whole situation.
Sure.
But again, you're going to have to decide what is more important as somebody who's doing this juggling act of being the part-time professional.
And one last thing before I close, because I did mention at the beginning about you being lucky. And have you got a story of something that comes to mind about just as an example of how that you have been lucky?
Sure. Sure. Okay. This is one of my favorite stories, and it deals with Brian May from Queen. So I get called and I'm told, hey, we're going to work. You're going to entertain this private party. It's going to be the Foundation Room. House of Blues. It's a private event. You can't take any photos, you know, and this and that. And I'm thinking, oh, what's going on? You know, who am I entertaining? The few times I've, you know, been in this situation, I've performed for the King of Saudi Arabia. I performed for the President of the United States. And it was just one of these that just popped up. So I'm, you know, excited. Who's this for? And I find out when I get there that it's Queen, the rock band. And I guess their singer now is Adam Lambert, is their singer now that they're touring with. And so I get there and it's mostly for support people, the crew, and you could tell they're, you know, but when Queen showed up and Adam Lambert showed up, these guys were rock stars and it's pretty obvious who they were. And so I'm performing Strolling Magic and everybody's being very receptive. It's very good. You know, everything's going great. And now I get to Brian May, you know, the guitar player who's also an astrophysicist. And I said, okay, you know, I'm performing for one of the other musicians and he's kind of watching over the shoulder kind of thing. And I said, well, let's do something for you. And so I spread out a pack of cards, you know, and then I say, I want you to pick one. He goes, nope, I already have one. And I said, no, what do you mean? You know, I need you to pick a card. And he goes, nope, I'm thinking of one. You tell me what it is. And I'm thinking, great. Here we go.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's celebrity, you know, he's, you know, not a good mood, whatever. So I just smiled and I said, great, whatever that card is you're thinking of, don't forget it. Also, I want you to physically remove one as well. And so now in my mind, I'm thinking, what am I going to do? You know, I'm going through my process of elimination. What can I do for his thought of card? And as he reaches out, pulls out a card, he looks at me, throws out the F-bomb, throws the card on the table and says, how the blank did you do that? And I look at him and I said, well, it's my job. So obviously I assume the card he's thinking of was the card he ended up picking.
Of course.
And so I made it look like that was the whole plan. And then, of course, I ribbon spread and show they're all different. But that's the card that he selected was the card he was thinking of. And here is this astrophysicist who I closed my performance with him with the crisscross force, where I forced some numbers on him because he told me 32 was this magic number for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I set the deck up with a 3 on top and a 2 on the bottom, and I have him cut the deck after some false shuffles, and we talk some more, and then he looks at the crisscross force, the top card and the bottom card, and you could tell his brain is just like hitting the floor. His mind is blown. And there is this astrophysicist.
That's great.
I just killed him with a crisscross force.
Yeah.
And I slid the deck over and I said, here, this is for you. Have a great night. Hope you guys, you know, rock it out tomorrow night.
Yep. You know when to quit.
And I walked away. And the agent called me the next day and says, what did you do? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And he goes, these people were raving about you like you were the greatest thing ever. So apparently I made a pretty big impact on crisscross force and a lucky card selection. So
yeah, that lucky card, and that's just one example. As I said to your listeners, that I hear from Jamie regularly of other situations that are similar like that, that are just amazing. Well, listen, again, thanks for your time and talking about this subject, because I know that it's on the hearts of a lot of people who are part-time professionals. And so what is your magic word?
We've been talking about it the entire time, and we've been saying that word multiple times, and that word is passion. So whatever it is you have in life, it's you find your passion and you pursue it. That's it. It's
pursue
simple.
Your passion. Yep, I love it. You're right. All right, so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was part-time professional Mr. Jamie Salinas, and this is Scotty out. Wow. Well, that was fantastic. Again, thank you very much, Jamie. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Lots of really good advice and some interesting stories and war stories. And continue to be lucky, my friend. I tell you, listeners, it is amazing. You know, it's not just that he's lucky. He just knows how to take advantage of situations whenever that something arises that could be made to look magical. So I guess one of the lessons to be learned there is not to overlook those opportunities, because those things do arise sometimes on a daily basis. It's just you just dismiss them. But if you think of them as perhaps being a magical effect, you could probably turn that into something and take credit for it. Kind of cool. Well, listen, at the beginning of the podcast, I said that Jamie was going to be giving away something, and he's going to give away two perfect personality readings. And again, this was by Paul Draper and Jamie Salinas. Let me just tell you a little bit about what this is, actually. I'm going to read the description of it. He says, over 10 years ago, Paul Draper created a system to provide personality readings. With five simple questions, you'll be able to provide an extremely accurate reading. Jamie Salinas fell in love with the system and adapted it to his style. In this instructional video, you will learn Paul's original method as well as Jamie's adaptation. Everything is included, as you will receive the instructional videos, sample readings, sample forms, editable forms for you to use, along with tips for providing an accurate reading for your guests. Now, this may not be something that you think that you would do, because it may seem like, okay, I'm doing psychic readings or palm readings, and perhaps that's not your style, or it's not something that you think that you would ever do. But let me tell you, when I first saw Paul, I kind of fell in love with that also and started fiddling around with it. And then Jamie took it to a different level and personalized it. And perhaps you might find something that you can personalize it to your style and your personality, your character then as well. But it's also something to have in your hip pocket. It's one of those things where you could be doing almost on an impromptu basis. That you just need a pencil and paper to draw out the thing, ask a couple of questions, and then it's your interpretation of you just kind of BSing your way through, is the best way, I guess, of kind of saying it. But they give you a lot of really good information on things that you can use. So again, this is pretty much like an impromptu kind of a thing, and it is powerful. And so essentially, again, that you're not giving psychic readings, you're not telling their future, but you're doing personality readings. In other words, they're telling you something, and essentially you're saying back to them what they've told you, but you are interpreting it, those words, and also what it is they've told you. This typically sells for, let's see, how much does it go for? $24.95. And as I said, it was for a long time on the top 10 bestsellers on the Penguin Magic Forum. But if you go this week, and we'll be running this next week also, we're going to be having this contest running. If you'll go to themagicwordpodcast.com, on this week's blog, there will be a contest form, and you can enter that contest, and we will send you a PDF of that for free if you are one of the two winners. Now, the advantage of this, obviously, is it is downloadable and it'll be sent through WeTransfer, that it is available to any and everybody regardless of where you live in the world, as long as that you have internet access, and obviously you do because you're listening to this podcast, and also that it's legal, I guess, for contest in your locale. So, nevertheless, if you just go to themagicwordpodcast.com, this week's blog, and you'll see a form there. Fill that out. You just need to put in your name and email address, and that will populate the form that I will see, a spreadsheet. And when we have the contest drawing, we'll just do a random drawing for two lucky winners, and they'll be announced in the next couple of weeks. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and find your passion and pursue it. This is Scotty out.